Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and shout out to my homie, Patrick Irvin. He's doing some behind-the-scenes things, some important stuff, so he's making it safe. It's all good. Hey, remember that the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc., and that's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information about PACS, Inc., make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the code of conduct that they created, how to become a member of the organization, how to donate, how to get involved. And they have a literacy program, a sports program, and all types of surveys with information collected. And if you hover your mouse over that learning center, you see a drop-down box with a whole bunch of information from audio, politics, books, survival information, legal cases, and videos. And there's also a store where you can go and purchase some things to help support the organization. Once again, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, learn about my co-host, Patrick Irvin, learn about Shelby Davis, and Queen Candace, the host of the Shelby's World podcast, as well as Enigma September, the host of the Enigma Self Hour, the realest hip-hop podcast ever. Also, remember to check out my sports podcast, the Fix Sports Podcast, every Monday coming out. And make sure you check out Patrick's podcast, Lessons from the Screen. It's going down. And, man, y'all stay tuned because we have a fun podcast series that's coming out where we will be ranking the top black movies of all time. So we got our brackets broken down to our 64, and we're doing the NCAA bracket style. So we're going to be in here arguing about what's our favorite black movie of all time. We're going to get down to the greatest, and it's going down. So y'all make sure y'all stay tuned. Hit us up on all our social media, Freedom Train Network on Instagram, Facebook, Freedom Train Net on Twitter, Freedom Train Network on YouTube, and remember the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. It's really going down, so you're home for your favorite podcast. All right, so today, we got a good interview. It's going to be a good one, man, because we're going to learn about perseverance. We're going to learn about self-esteem. We're going to learn about self-worth. We're going to talk about overcoming obstacles. We're going to talk about persevering, looking adversity directly in the eye. And busting the adversity in the eye and making strides and making sure you make the right steps to become the man or the woman that you want to be. So I met this young man not too long ago, about a month ago. I was out with one of the organizations I'm with, Linked Up. Shout out to Linked Up, Shelby, Fraud, Candace, Stephanie, everybody will be down with Linked Up, Mr. Taylor, DJ Lil Boy, everybody. So we out, and we serve in the community, and I get introduced to this young man who has been through some trials. He definitely has a story to tell, definitely has a testimony, because he's still here through all the adversity that he's been through. This young man is an author. He's a poet. He's resilient. He has leadership qualities. He wants to do the right thing. He wants to make sure he makes the best out of his life, and I said, well, shit, man. Fuck all that. I'm going to have you on my podcast, brother, because one of the main things about us as people who always talk about helping people, a lot of times when people get a chance to help somebody, they just talk about it. But I want to say, damn all that. I want to give this young brother a chance to tell his story to my audience. So I want all of you all to get up and put your hands together for the brother, Robert McNeil. And y'all better clap like you know you clap. All right, now. Yeah. Welcome, man. Welcome to the Freedom Train Podcast. I'm happy to have you here.
What's up, bro? What's up, everybody? I'm Robert McNeil, and I'm ready to get it in with Freedom Train Network.
There it is, man. So I'm sure people are curious about you. So give us some background information about yourself and how becoming a writer has helped you grow as a man.
First off, my name is Robert McNeil. I'm a Tallahassee native. I grew up on the Bond, the west side of Tallahassee and Bond community. I went through a lot of trials and tribulations in my life. You know, I had a great support system, although, you know, things wasn't as fortunate in my life coming up. But like I say, I've been through a lot, and the struggles that I've been through has helped me, you know, create, you know, the character that I am today. And I'm thankful for that. And as for writing, how has writing helped me?
Yeah, helped you grow as a man.
Yeah, helped me grow as a man.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me channel my fears, my doubts. You know, it's I don't have to that lash out anger that I used to have, or that depression that I used to have, or that self esteem that I didn't have. It helped me channel all that and create something beautiful into poetry, stories, and it releases it. It was it released a lot of things from me that was holding me down. It actually built me up because I got a chance to realize that I was great at something. And once mm-hmm. I realized I was great, it helped me prosper as a man, and I become great in other areas also in my life. So, you know, okay. Writing has helped me a great deal.
That's great, man. That's great. And I'm encouraging people to write because, you know, of course they know I'm an author myself, but mm-hmm. writing is freeing. Just like to me, reading mm-hmm. is freeing because it allows the imagination to go, and it allows your creativity to grow, and it's you expressing yourself. So I'm glad you're a writer, man. Welcome to the world of writing, to the world of authoring.
For sure. I want to say something before we move on and add on to what you were saying with encouraging the writers. You know, when you write, you put more literature out there for the minds to grow, for the next generation to grow. So, you know, it's an expansion. It's gonna be like an evolution, you know what I'm saying, that you putting out in the atmosphere, and you also educating people. So that's how writing it ain't nothing but a different form of reading, a different form of communication to get, you know, any message that needs to be get across into the people. And once you do that, you're giving away knowledge, you're giving away game. So you are equipping, you know, the generation that's to come and those that are still here. So
there you go.
I encourage everybody to become a writer.
There you go. So when did you first become a writer, and like what really got you going and writing? Like, what was that inspiration to make you want to start writing?
Actually, I started writing when I was incarcerated, and I used to write on a notepad at the school that they had us going to, and right before I started writing on the notepad, you got the gate at the prison, and mm-hmm. The birds fly in and out this gate. You know, they sit on top of the barbed wire. They, you know, they go wherever. And the first thing that I wrote was called A Bird. And, you know, just mm-hmm. watching the birds roam freely, coming and going, I wanted to be a bird. I wanted to have wings. So when I went mm-hmm. to school, I started writing on the word pad. And the first piece that I ever wrote was called A Bird. And, you know, mm-hmm. it was just me expressing my way of trying to get the freedom. So that would really encourage me, and I had a teacher that was watching me every time I come into the classroom. I was writing and stuff, writing on a notepad, and, you know, one day she erased everything I had, and, you know, I kind of looked at her kind of sideways a little bit, you know, because I thought I was dope, and I'm like, why would you do something like that? You know, in my mind, I ain't actually tell her that, mm-hmm. but she was teaching me a lesson all in one, you know, by her doing that, it increased, you know what I'm saying? My level of writing made me continue to practice, continue to stay focused and to retain everything in my mind. You know what I'm saying? So it helped me, it strengthened me in a lot of ways. So, you know, since I was in prison, man, and watching the birds roam freely, you know, a writer get inspired by different things. You know, it can be a picture. It can be, you know, somebody's life. It can be a number of things, you know, and you just can get that raw feeling, you know what I'm saying, of emotion, and you just express it. So, you know, that's how I came out from watching birds. And
man,
I wanted to be
up.
Free. So, yeah.
That's dope. Yeah. That's dope, man.
For sure.
That's real dope. So, I want to ask this question in this particular way because I hear how you're saying when you were in prison, you saw the birds, and freedom, I'm pretty sure at that time, freedom for you meant to not be in prison. But
for sure.
now, now that you're out and you're where you are in life, what does freedom mean to you now?
Freedom to me is not being caged mentally.
Mm-hmm.
How can I put it? Back then, backing up a little bit in prison, at that particular time and my me doing time, I was like 18, 19 years old. About 19 years old, going on 20 or something like that. So that was mm-hmm. my freedom then. But as I growed and then I started educating myself, I became free in the mind. And freedom then became to me is not having an entrapped mind, just as it is today, not being mm-hmm. entrapped within my mind, from the negative thoughts that may come into my mind, because the negative thoughts that was in my mind was killing me slow. I was dead while breathing. So now I have life in my mind. I have seeds of life. I look at myself in a different form than I did back then. It's the elevation within it. And, just being free within your mind, you'll be free everywhere. I don't care where a person puts you at. As long as your mind isn't on a robotic cycle and you ain't, like, repeating, the same rat race over and over, far as in just being mentally dead. And that's what freedom is to me, being free in my mind, because in your mind you can go any place. And once you go any place in your mind, it'll manifest. You know what I'm saying? So being free in the mind brings upon manifestation. It gives you motivation. It teaches you to go after what you need, keep you determined, keep your spirit lift. You know what I'm saying? So like once right. I got that freedom in mind, that's when I consider myself free. Now, as far as physically free, we all living in the United States. We follow rules and regulations and, things right. like that. Now, that's a whole different topic. But in my mind, I don't accept that, because I go anywhere in my mind. And once I go anywhere in my mind, I know manifestation coming because I'm going away. So that's freedom to me. Yeah, for sure.
That's what's up, man. That's a great answer, man. I definitely like that. That's a great answer. So this next question, I can relate. I've been homeless. We've experienced homelessness twice in my life. I think we were in like middle school or elementary school. Yeah, elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
We were kicked out of our house, and then in the eighth grade, our house burnt down. And living out of hotels and having to stay in like slum houses and things because. Whatever situation just went right. I'm too young. I really didn't know the full, the extent of the whole situation. But I know what I experienced as a homeless teen, and it wasn't fun. It wasn't cool. But it does kind of shape you in a specific way. So, how did becoming a homeless teen affect your overall quality of life and your decision making at that time?
When we became homeless, I was like in my preteen years, so I was probably mm-hmm. like 10, going on 11, and when that happened, it was like, we really didn't know it was going to happen. Like I said, it kind of like, it just happened. Now, my mom, she right. never, she always kept everything, within herself, and she never let us see, what she was going through as a person. So I think it really affected me the night we had to sleep in the public park. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. my mom, she is my mom, five kids, three boys and two mm-hmm. girls. And she had let her girls go to with one of our grandmas or whatever, Miss Aretha, and she kept her boys. And what affected me was I think it took it changed my mindset when we slept in the public park. And the grind was out. Even in my book, I written a poem called Hard Times, and the line in it say, I probably have to get it, but mm-hmm. it's basically stated that, the grind was our bed and the sky was our roof at night. What I'm saying? And I was looking at my mama, and she was like, baby, it's going to be all right. And, I believed it. You know what I'm saying? And I put the covers over my two little brother, and it kind of altered my mind state. And the only thing I knew then, I had to help my mom in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how I was going to help her. I couldn't get no job to help her, but I said I was going to help her. And it affected me to the point where's the rest of my family? You know what I'm saying? Where are all these people that, you're a cute little handsome little boy, I love you, wherever by that, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was like, and ain't nobody like throw that life jacket out there to come get us. They knew what my mama was going through, but you know, she stood strong, and it just and it made me it made me rebellious. I'm not gonna lie, it made me rebellious. It made me, you know what I'm saying, look at a lot of people different, because I was a child, and my mama, I never questioned her, you know, why we was homeless. She just always said, baby, it's going to be all right. You know what I'm saying? I just watched her pray, you know what I'm saying, and cry, you know what I'm saying? And I just couldn't do nothing but just look. I was kind of like in a state of shock, you know what I'm saying?
But
when she said it was all right, you know, I rolled with it. And next thing I know, hey, we was back up on our own roof again.
Yeah, man. Like, now, I feel you, especially when you're saying you were looking at family members who constantly tell you that they love you, but then... like, nobody's there. Like, literally, nobody's there to help you. They may be calling or they may be trying to call you to see how you're doing, but nobody's trying to really help. And that's an eye-opening experience. I know, especially, like, the time when our house burnt down, I don't value possessions the same. I value, what it made me value more was real relationships, true relationships.
For sure. People
who are really going to be there for you when you really need them. Even in situations where you don't need them, they'll be there for you. But that, it made me appreciate real people. So.
For sure. I can feel that.
Yeah, man. So that's why, you know, I always try to carry myself in a way to, for one, as a man, to stand on my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do something. If I can't do it, I'll let you know I can't do it ahead of time. But also, kind of give back. That's why this, for me, this interview is important, because, man, I want you to be successful as you can be. Now, hell, I don't know it all, but I know, I know what I've learned on my journey, and I just want to be able to help you as much as possible, man.
So appreciate it, bro.
Ain't no thing, man. So, you suffered a stroke, and it was a pretty serious situation. So, can you tell us how old you were when you suffered a stroke, and can you explain the experience and your recovery?
I was like 11 years old, and God rest her soul, Miss Aretha, I was at her house. And I hadn't eaten for like 2 weeks, and I had just been drinking Gatorade, and she had been monitoring. My mama was working, and she used to watch us while my mama was working and stuff.
Right.
And she had told my mama, she was like, you need to take this baby to the hospital and get him checked out. Something wrong with him. He ain't eating. And so my mama took me to TMH. They ran all kind of tests on me, and they couldn't find that. So my mom had called my dad. He came and got me, and I had stayed at my dad's house that night. But while I was asleep, I suffered the stroke. I didn't even know I had the stroke. I woke up, and my dad actually woke me up, and he was like, come on, Junior, we finna get ready to go, you know, to the hospital and take it back to the hospital. So he walked off, finished to get dressed, I guess, and I guess everything hadn't processed in my mind. So I stood up, and when I stood up, I fell on the floor. And I was confused because, like, I couldn't move my left side. So, it was like tears coming. I'm like, man, what's wrong with me? You know, it's like everything was dead. And once my dad realized what was going on, only thing he could do was just dress me and they'll put me on his shoulder, put me in the car. And we went to the hospital, and they said I suffered a stroke. So when they end up, I guess they did an MRI or something like that. They said I had to have surgery immediately. If I didn't. If I had it, was a chance I would die, and if I didn't get it, I was going to for sure die.
Right.
So I underwent surgery, thought I was going to be, like, brain dead, and I was paralyzed, man. It was rough. I had staples, and I had two different surgeries. I had staples from both surgeries, and, man, I couldn't even really look at myself, you know, in the mirror, you know. When they showed me the mirror, my eyes was all swollen shut. It wasn't even me no more. So it was a very tough time, man. And then, you know, people that bathed in me, I really weren't comfortable with that. So my mom and my sister and a few nurses, you know what I'm saying, they had to bathe me. It was kind of, I ain't feel right. I wasn't myself. I thought I wasn't going to walk again. You know, I was a very depressing time. continuously losing, you know, weight in there. Because I'm so full of, you know, medicine and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be heavily dosed up on that. The kill, you know, the, like, ward off the pain and stuff. And I was in there, you know, for a couple months. Man, it was rough. You know, my mama stuck it out with me. She even lost her job behind it, you know, from being there right. so much, taking on so much. And, you know, she supported me through the whole ride. Then I had to go to the rehabilitation center. And I was in a wheelchair there. And that's where I learned mm-hmm. to, like, walk again. Before I left the hospital, I ended up getting feeling back in, you know what I'm saying, in my right hand. And it was showing progress, but it wasn't saying that, you know, the recovery of walking, you know what I'm saying, was
right.
I don't think it was on their radar. So, man, right. I went to Hell South, man, and I met an Asian guy. He was on an intern. Like, he was like a physical therapist or something like that. He was from Jacksonville. I'll never forget. And he helped me, you know what I'm saying, nurse me back to health, you know what I'm saying? Like, and what he was doing was working. And the next thing I knew it, man, I was in a wheelchair, and I was running again, bro.
There you go.
I couldn't even believe it, you know what I'm saying? I was running again. But it was definitely depressing, though, bro, you know. Definitely.
Man, that's an amazing story, bro. Like, I don't know if nobody ever told you, it takes strength for you to not give up on yourself. So if you never, even if you never even thought about it like that way, just really start mm-hmm. to think about, like, you never gave up on yourself. Through everything, think about through everything that you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You never once gave up on yourself. Why do you? What made you keep going?
Man, I wanted to walk again. You know what I mean? I didn't want to live my life like that. You know, I wanted to walk again. But as of now, like, you know, with the mindset that I possess now, it's like I feel like I can only stop myself. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. within me, I'm not going to let myself get in the way of me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I just, you know, no matter what I done been through, you know, like once I came into my own and having my own mind, I done did some things that slowed my progress down. But even in the midst of the consequences and the things that I reaped in the end, I still fought through it. Because my mama always told me, you know, it's going to be all right. And all them words stick with me. You know, it ain't long as it has been. That's her favorite, you know what I'm saying? Her favorite saying, mm-hmm. baby, it ain't long as it has been.
Right.
So, you know, I look at the good and do away with the bad, and I just keep going.
That's what's up, man. Nah, that's a great, mindset and a great attitude to have, and you should be very proud of yourself to know that sure. that's how you exist and that's how you think. Because, I mean, but, you know, and just, you know, being real, the environment that we all come from, like we basically come from the same environment, right? So you're in Houghton Street, mm-hmm. right? And think mm-hmm. about how many men and women older and younger than you and same age as you who said, fuck life, I'm just going to survive and try to make it. And but within that whole environment, you said, nah, that's not good enough for me. I'm going to go past survive. I'm going to thrive. Like,
for sure.
That's something to pat yourself on the back about.
I sure appreciate it, bro. It's definitely, you know what I'm saying, an eye-opener, you know, because when I go back over there and I see people, you know, that I grew up with, they looking older than my grandma. And my grandma yeah. battling cancer, you know right. what I'm saying, and it's hurtful, and it's a store where everybody used to hang out at, you know, like for like older like winos and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they
done
closed
yeah,
it down
the Robinson
now.
Store. Yeah,
the Robinson store for sure. And yeah. man, when I was living in Atlanta, when I was coming back and forth from Atlanta down here, when I used to ride past that store, I seen some of my same classmates. Looking like the people that done been out there 20, 30 years, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was hurtful, you know what I'm saying? But only thing I could do is keep going, you know, and I thank
right.
God that, you know what I'm saying, I ain't give up on myself and that I want more for myself. And I think all that come from, man, I'm going to say this, I don't want to stray off topic, but I think mm-hmm. what that come from is when you were a kid and your dreams die. I told my grandma this, what I'm doing for my daughter, and I want to be able to help her fulfill her dreams, because if I'm not in a position to help her manifest at least some of what she has in her mind, then I'm out of position, because I didn't create a position for her to be in. And once your dreams die, your soul die. You know, you just living, like you say, just surviving, you know what I'm saying?
But that's an important thing to say, because I don't have any children, but like all my little brothers and all the little kids that I am around, I do have an influence on. Mm-hmm. I remind them as much as possible to keep dreaming. Don't ever lose their imagination, because as like, you know, as writers, as creators, it's our imagination that we draw from. It's our imagination that we use to create. And if you allow somebody, or even as an adult, if you actively work to take away the imagination from a child, like you say, you turn them into a robot, and they just making it now. So, all right, so you survived homelessness, you recovered from your stroke, and now another obstacle is, like we talked about earlier, you spent time in prison. So, if you don't mind, you know, going into how you ended up in prison and what you experienced in prison.
I'm gonna start up from juvenile. After my surgery, you know, I got back healthy, and I lived with my grandma for a while. My grandma Tina Jackson, and shout out to both of my grandmas, Eddie Much and Tina Jackson, by the way, both of them great women. I started spending time pretty much between back and forth from day house. And I started to get into things, you know what I'm saying? I started to first learn how to sell drugs. I started getting started packing guns and stuff like that. So then I end up in the juvie hall. And it's the first time I had handcuffs put on me, it was like I couldn't keep them off me. So every time I get out a couple weeks, a month or something, like I'm back in juvie hall going to a boys home, going to a program. And I just kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and my dreams had died. And I just, you know, this what it is. I'm finna bulldog it all the way out. And until I turned 18, the juvenile system, when I turned 17, when I got out of my last boys home, the judge had told me, he said, "You ever come before this court again, you gonna be direct file and all this here. And you going to the big house," basically what they told me. And man, I had from the time I was about 13 to 17, I hadn't been out like a full year. And as soon as I turned 18, I was on my way to prison. I was in the county jail, but then after that, I was on my way to prison for 10 years. You know, following the I'm gonna keep it all the way real with you. You know, when you out there in the streets and you just out there living and stuff, you just looking for acceptance. You know what I'm saying? So you down with the play or whatever, and it's called wanna be down. You know, you looking for love, you looking for acceptance. You know, so you looking for a family that's gonna be real with you. Yeah, I had my mom, my brothers and sisters, but you know, you be looking for something else too. You'd be looking for a different type of love, you know what I'm saying? And I was seeking that, and in the midst of me seeking that, I fell, you know what I'm saying? Trying to be down, trying to show people that I'm a tough guy, you know, just being ignorant, you know what I'm saying? Not aware of myself or who I am, you know, having an I don't care attitude, and it landed me, you know, into some rough spots. I done had a temp on my life before. You know what I'm saying? And it's a couple other things, you know, I really don't want to get into, but, you know, it's a lot of things that happen, you know, and that transpire. And, man, what led me to go to prison, we was, robbing and stuff like that. They couldn't get me for the actual charge, so they hit me with lesser included offense. So I gun possessions and stuff like that, and I ended up going to prison, man. And when I went to prison, I thought life was over with. Right. You know, I'm 18 years old, going to do a 10-year sentence. You know, I won't be back till I'm 28. Right. So it was like I didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't get into no gangs or nothing like that. I didn't fall to any homosexuality whatsoever, no attempts, no about tos, no thinking about nothing. I was what you call a person that stood on his square. You know, I was solid. And I started, you know, my lifestyle didn't change when I first got to prison. I was still living like I was still in the streets because that's what it was. But when I got there, I seen it was a different type of streets. These streets here are treacherous. And it's like, it's up close and personal. I ain't know if you got, you know what I'm saying, a situation with an individual. I ain't nothing, oh, I'm going to catch you in the streets. No, it's right there in your face. So it's like you got to go and handle your business right then and pray to God, you know, that you come out of that situation clean, you know what I'm saying? And like I say, being in there opened my eyes up to respect, because then that respect is everything. You know, you ain't got your gun, you ain't got your money, you ain't got none of that up and up. It's about respect, and if you're going to stand on what you're going to stand on, you know, it's a lot of, I watch a lot of people fall victim, you know, weak-minded people fall victim to gang violence, homosexuality, drugs. I watched it, man. It's not like what you see on TV as far as prison reform and all. That ain't the case in there. You know, they ain't trying to make you a better person. They caging you and locking you, you know what I'm saying, and turning you into more of a animal. You know what I'm saying? And you nothing in there. I realized that. In there, you're nothing to the people that govern that scenery. You know, you just a number. You cattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I call it human trafficking. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
Being in there, I know I seen people lose their life in there. You know, it's plenty of times. You know, it's crazy. And you got to, I'm gonna tell you, man. You got to be a strong willed person to go to sleep around 72 other individuals outside yourself that's in there for murder, rape, and all kind of other stuff. You know, all kind of other hideous crimes. You know what I'm saying? Pedophile crimes and stuff. And you got to go to sleep around these people. You know, like every night. You know what I'm saying? It was certain nights, man, that I had to fall asleep with a shank and a lock in my hand. You know what I'm saying? Staying late, trying to, you know what I'm saying? After I done got into it with somebody. You know, it was very traumatizing. And I started to wake up, man. I got to write this dude to his name, Keith Young. Shout out to Keith Young. He's from Jacksonville, Florida. He served as an elder to me, as a big brother. And through the grace of God, he helped me start turning my life around. He used reverse psychology to actually get me on the right path. He kind of like broke me down and built me up, but I thought he was being one of those, you know how people treat brothers when they make it, and then they feel like they too good at two shoes and stuff like that, like they looking down on them, but he wasn't looking down on me. He was actually pulling me up, but he wanted to break me down before he can build me back up. And I got in school, bro, dealing with him. I ended up getting my GED. And what like I kicked myself in the behind by about it, because when I got in school, I wasn't in school a whole month and I got my GED. So they let me know right then that I was playing with my life. You know what I'm saying? For sure. And when I got my GED, I went to him and he was like, I was like, bro, I got my GED. He was like, that's it. That's all you wanted. You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking at him like, man, dude, what's wrong with you? But he wanted more for me more than I wanted for myself at that point of time. Because he had just gave back 25 years on a 55-year sentence, so he's still trying to fight 35 more years. And he had been down like seven. Yeah, so he just wanted to see me win. And, man, I just started and I'm gonna tell people this on this interview. In prison, it's the crowd that you want to be. It's just like life, bro. What you make it, that's how your ride going to be. Don't get me wrong. You got altercations. You got all of that. But if you want to be in a certain field in life, you really want to get your life together, it's all going to be on you. You know what I'm saying? So I took the knowledge, you know, the path and the group of people that was seeking knowledge. You know what I'm saying? That was trying to better themselves. Brothers that's in there making business plans. Brothers that's in there. Actually setting up, you know what I'm saying, businesses for the people that actually want to be a business person out here, doing all the ground research for them. Brother that was in there getting paralegal degrees, you know what I'm saying? Just I choose that route of the community that was in there. And the brothers was always reading, always, and it was like the battle for knowledge in there, you know what I'm saying? So that's the route that I took, and I'm glad I took that route.
Now, that's what's up, man. Like, now, because you're dropping a lot of knowledge in this that people need to hear.
For sure.
Especially, like, a lot of the jits who are making some of the decisions that you made. But I love that you're giving the realness of the game. Like, you're not sugarcoating it. Like, yeah, this is what I did. But this is the this is the real consequences of these actions. And yeah, man, I appreciate your authenticity, because don't ever lose that, man. Like,
for sure.
Be you. Like, you can always improve you, but still be you. Like, you always know, stay on your square, man, because authenticity is great, man. So
appreciate it, bro.
So let me I want to ask this. Looking back from your time in prison and seeing where you are now and things you're doing, what do you think was the greatest lesson that you learned about yourself or just overall while you were in prison?
That I ain't, this right here, I ain't going to say like I don't need nobody. Everybody needs somebody. But I knew in order for my life to change, it was going to take me. I didn't need nobody for that. You know, and that was like the greatest asset that I had gained about myself. I don't need nobody to change my life. I got to take the time out and reconstruct myself and change myself for the help of change to come to me. You know what I'm saying? So it was like knowing that I had to rely on myself to make a change to better my life. That was like the greatest asset, you know what I'm saying, that I obtained about myself. And I love myself for that, because, like I just said in my last interview yesterday, self-love is the greatest love on earth. Can't nobody reproduce that but you. You know what I'm saying? Only you can keep that. You know, you can destroy it. You continue to build it or whatever. Only you can give you that, and that nobody can give you that. Self-love and self-definition. Can't nobody give you that. That's the greatest love on earth, greatest charity that you're going to ever be to yourself. And once you have self-love, you got self-respect, you got dignity, you know what I'm saying? You stand on morals and principles. And that same way that you got that same, how can I say that plateau that you have within yourself, you know what I'm saying? That pinnacle that you at, you know, that self-love, it'll reflect, and you'll get that same to everybody else that you come into. You know what I'm saying? Because one thing, when you love yourself, you're going to love the next person. And it may not be no undeniable unconditional love, but you got enough love to respect and honor this person for who he is as a person. So, it'll replicate. You feel what I'm saying? And it'll continue to grow. You know what I'm saying? Because they're going to be like, dang, I ain't know that brother was like that, but he made me feel good today. You know what I'm saying? And then how you think they're going to be? It's going to continue to go. So self-love is the greatest love on earth, and it's the best thing that you can give yourself as a person, is self-love. Because if you don't love yourself, you don't believe in yourself, therefore you ain't going to be able to believe in nothing that's within your world. You know what I'm saying? So, self-love, bro.
There you go. That's very important. I'm glad you're saying that, because a lot of people wouldn't even think about somebody being able to learn that in prison, but you have. So, but like you're saying, though, it's what you make it. Life is what you make it, no matter where you are.
For sure.
All right. So, your first book, your baby, your book of poetry is Confined Thoughts. All right. So, I know we kind of got an idea of why you named it Confined Thoughts, but we don't want to jump to conclusions.
For sure.
But why did you name your book Confined Thoughts, and what was the overall inspiration behind writing the book?
I know people probably thinking that it was because I was locked up, but that wasn't necessarily the case. It was my inner self trying to find a way to break free. You feel what I'm saying? So I was uncaging my mind. So that's why I call it confined thoughts. You know, so I was able to manifest it to where they're no longer hindering me no more. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I got it out. And what inspired me to start writing, like I told you when I was at school that day, you know what I'm saying? I had, when I was watching the birds, but what really made me take off, I was in solitary confinement for 120 days. And for some things that I had, that I hadn't got in trouble, I ain't gonna even sit here and lie to you. Right. And they put me behind that door. And so while I was in there, you really alone. Ain't nobody, you got a roommate, and you may not have a roommate for 30 days, maybe the whole time that you in there. And I did a lot of, that's what my trend, I went into a cocoon then, like, you know how the worm going to cocoon, becoming a butterfly. Right. You know, forgot the actual name for that. What is called a
metamorphosis process.
And while I was in there, only thing I kept doing was requesting paper and pen, because I had so much to get out. Like, and that's where I replayed my whole life over and over and over and over and over and over. And I just got to it, bro, and confined thoughts. That's how I came up with it, not just because I was locked up, but I was just trying to free myself from the death that was roaming through my mind, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So.
And writing is a way to escape. Writing is a way to let go. It's coping, man. It's freeing. It's relaxing. So, definitely, man. So, kind of give the people an overall breakdown of your book, and when they're reading your book, what they can expect from the book.
First off, the truth. You know, when it's concerning me, it's the truth. I've learned to, and I hope it inspires people to accept the truth about them and who they are as a person. You know what I'm saying? Your flaws, you know, the experiences that you done went through or whatever. But I expect people to gain the knowledge that you can take something when you're in your lowest point and turn it into a diamond. You feel what I'm saying? Because under great pressure produces diamonds. You right. know what I'm saying? And my whole goal to the, like, for people to gravitate, you know, to what I'm pushing out there in the atmosphere is to show them that you are the source of your being, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever's inside you, you can put it in the physical form. You feel what I'm saying? That's why that plays around the theme of confined thoughts. It's just a manifestation. Because if you can conceive something, you can make it appear right in front of you. That's how the world exists today. No matter what state that you are in, you can create a diamond, you know what I'm saying, under great pressure. So,
yeah.
That's pretty much sum up, you know, confined thoughts. But like I say, and another thing, if a person, especially for people that know me, that read the book, they gonna ask you to be like, "Well, dang, I ain't know he even much thought about that," because they used to seeing me from my past. You know what I'm saying? Once you have lived a certain way in front of people, when you try to when you show them a different side, you know they may not accept it, or may not believe in what you're doing. So it's like it's making a believer out of people, that people can come from a situation and actually take another route if they exercise that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it shows people that they can create a diamond up under strong pressure, man. So, you know, and that's proven fact. You know, when coal is pressure, you know, produces diamond.
Yeah, and you know, I always say growth should be inevitable. Growth is something that's supposed to happen. And a lot of times mm-hmm. you're going to outgrow people. And
mm-hmm.
you should never have to shrink yourself for anybody, because if we can't be on the same level, then we just probably shouldn't be around each other. Because being mm-hmm. from the hood, man, it's like I can't make the hood better if I don't get better. Like, because mm-hmm. the thing is, it should be our job to make sure that we go out and become the best that we can be and bring it back to our neighborhoods to help make our neighborhoods better. But we can't do that worrying about if somebody's going to still rock with us or not, because I can mm-hmm. now, you know, I can pronounce all my damn letters, or I know this, I know that, you know, I went out and experienced the world on this level, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I'm going to never lose myself, but I'm going to grow. And if mm-hmm. you don't like it, hey, man, that's your problem and it ain't mine.
I want to say this on that right there. When I first had came home, and I started, like, at first I wasn't really coming around, you know, then I started coming around a little bit, and I realized when I spoke, wasn't nobody really listening, because mm-hmm. it's hard for them to understand that type of foreign language. not saying that people slow or illiterate, but that's just not the popular topic to talk about, you know, for righteousness and stuff like that, or just doing anything other than what the norm is doing. And once I realized, bro, I didn't fit in anymore, I was happy. And that let me know that I made it. And when I say I'm not talking about on the financial later, financial situation or whatnot, I'm talking about just making it as I made it out. My mind is outside of this now. You know what I'm saying? So it's like my mind, I don't even correlate. I don't even coexist. You know, not putting nobody down or nothing like that, but I knew that my mind had an elevated. And once I knew that I didn't belong no more. I was an outsider. I was cool with it, bro, because that was the whole goal, was not to revert back to my old ways.
Right.
And once now, I see, cool. You know what I'm saying? For sure.
Yeah, man. So, I want you to do a little bragging on your book, man. If I was, you know, for my listeners, so tell them why they need to read your book. What, basically just lay it out, why they need to read your book.
Why they need to read my book. For one, you're always supposed to support your people.
First and foremost.
Because I think Louis Farrakhan said this. He said the black dollar should always circulate in the hood. Within the neighborhood, within us, the culture several times before it go anywhere else. So first off, you should want to support your black people because it helps our community grow financially. Second of all, the reason why you should read this book, because I know there's somebody out there it can touch. I know it's something in it's relatable, especially to the struggle. And I know it can teach and convey a lot of people and help people, you know what I'm saying, think about things in their life, like, because you may can't put it in a word form, you may can't express it, you know what I'm saying, through words, just talking to somebody, but this, it'll help you cope. It's therapeutic. It's enjoyable, man, you know, and I encourage everybody to go out and get it and learn, you know, from a man that was down at the lowest point in life, you know, and he's still making a rise. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It just shows you you can defeat death. You know what I'm saying? You can defeat death, and I'm not talking about physical death. I'm talking about, you know, a spiritual death within yourself. You know what I'm saying? So it shows you how a person died from something to live into something else. You know what I'm saying? So I just and it's my life story, man. It's all fact. Mm-hmm. It ain't nothing. It's not nothing fake. It's my life, you know. Not just bragging, but it is, you know. And if you don't mind, bro, I would love to read one to the people.
Go ahead.
Just to show them, you know what I'm saying?
Do your thing. Do your thing, man.
All right. Y'all bear with me. This right here is called Dirty Diary. It's Dirty Diary, y'all. So cold on this side of the plateau. Mountains in the Appalachian Plain couldn't shiver me. I'm a blacktop runner, you know, raised without a blanket. Swigging the malt beverage, raking crumbs from Lucy's table. Getting my fields of freeway dreams, cell block depression, speaking less to myself because of the grit and grime I slithered through. Mama got a habit. Daddy fell away, don't I yell it too? Forcing me into the uncertain. Public park rest havens, homeless grief inspired me, puffing the reef, chopping the cane. Vain hindsight got me beefing with dudes from grade school. Socially appearing to be way cool. Just a systematic flunky. Slave-driven division and conquer. Or was it survival? Doesn't matter, seeds were sown in the devil's blood. Flooding my youth with weeds and terrors. I weep endlessly silent tears. Dirty Diary. Shaping a story of no glory. Just a story of a pictorial sequence of a common hood bio. Concealed in the heart of a ghetto child who walked a mile feeling vegetable. The kind diced in cans. Valley of dry bones, son of man. Refusing to be blended food. Rejecting spoiled substances, upsetting his outlook. Ink is waist deep in this notebook of a felon charting tales liquidating the conscience. With false reasoning implementing pollution. No saline solution can dilute the vocation I once lived by. And they wonder why I still cry. Dirty Diary.
tell you, so, hey, man, we got to put some hand claps for that there, right after that. Man, I got to give it up, Dirty Diary. That's what I'm talking about, man. Now, that's real, though. Like, I've been enjoying reading the book, man, and learning about you and just going through your journey and then hearing you speak about it. So before we get to our last question, do you ever think you'll write a book going more in-depth about your story, kind of like a autobiography of yourself?
I have one called The Eye of My Struggle. It's my life, but I kind of like wrote like a tale around it. So it's like it's a book inspired by a true event. So like 90% of the stuff in there actually happened. You know what I'm saying? Called The Eye of My Struggle. But and the reason why I did it like that, because I was trying to get into writing a script for it, actual movie script for it. So that's why I kind of like expanded it the way that I was doing it or whatever. So yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's what's up. And I think it'll be a real interesting story, and a lot of people will tune in to learn about you.
Mm-hmm.
So because sure. They know for even sure. Even those who are gonna listen to this, they're gonna be like, damn, you know, I want to learn more. I want to know what's next.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what's up. So our final question, this is the question that we ask everybody, and we like to log these answers, and we're going to do something with them one day.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, like you're king of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
The vision will be gone.
Uh-huh.
Competition wouldn't be there. It'll be a wholesome community, like division. Like the way if I can compute, you know what I'm saying. And I won't just have it a one way thinking. Everybody's voice will count. You know what I'm saying. And everybody's voice will be heard. Don't get me wrong. It'll be law and order, but it should cater to everybody. You know what I'm saying. There would be no religion. It wouldn't be that. People would have the freedom of thought. You know, as long as it's they being respectable with what they thoughts, and you know, however, as long as it ain't nothing corruptible, you know, it will be pure, bro. I'm talking about straight up and down. Evil wouldn't even exist in our world. You feel me? That won't even exist. Everybody would be helpful, and it'll continue to be that way. You know what I'm saying? Every man will have their own. It wouldn't be no such thing as poor. None of that. No poverty, no none of that. You know what I'm saying? Everybody will have their own, and they will continue to have their own. It'll be just like how our brothers operated in, whether it was Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Black Wall Street. You know, it'll be that. And I wanted to say this, too. This would be a decree in the land, right? Just think about it. We like, what, 40 million plus in the United States?
Yep, around 40 million.
Black America?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say 40 million, right?
Yep.
Each month, out of 40 million people, everybody gave $10. You know what I'm saying? From out their check, 40 million. So you times 40 million times what? Times 10, that's 400 million. Mm-hmm. You do that. For 12 months, it's like $4.8 billion. We do that in 5 years. We don't need nobody schools. We don't need nobody hospitals. We don't need nobody military, police, none of that. Because it's like I say, we so divided to where we are poor. But if we collectively come together, just on $10 alone, bro, you feel what I'm saying? We got all the resources that we need. You know, and that's just what it is. Like I say, it'll be we'll have a treasury that cater to the needs of the people. You know what I'm saying? Like I say, and we would separate, bro. I mean, no shade, bro, to nobody, but I just know what separation do to people. You know what I'm saying? You could be able to find yourself in separation. And the reason why I say that this is true and it's factual, and can't nobody refute this, because I was in 10 years of solitude, and I had enough time to focus on myself. And I think that's... What's wrong with us today? We don't have time or focus on the agenda for ourselves because we're too busy living a different agenda that don't care nothing about us. You feel what I'm saying?
Worrying about other people. Sure. Now, sure. But see, sure. There's a such thing as separate but equal, and there's nothing wrong with people building amongst themselves. But people only have a problem with what you're building amongst your group when black people do it. Because think about it like this. In certain cities in the United States, they have an actual whole Chinatown. Anybody ever went to the Asians and told them, oh, having Chinatown is racist or having Chinatown is wrong? Everybody say none of them. Mm-mm. It's only when black people do it because we're the number one targets when it comes to racism. So. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you this here too. And yeah, you can trace this through history. Before the United States, I just feel like once they see we don't need them or depend on them for anything, that's when it's a problem. Oh, they over there doing it. They over there because when you don't need them for nothing, then they world crashes because they needed you for everything. You know what I'm saying? They needed you to be slaves so they can prosper. You feel what I'm saying? They need you to be poor so they can stay rich. You know, it just like that, bro. Once you step out on your own and you don't need them for anything, you got your own thing going on, that's when it's a problem. Now you are you a terrorist now. You feel what I'm saying? If you look at the civil rights movement, well, when J. Edgar Hoover put out all the people that was actually activists and abolitionists and stuff like that, you know, he put them on the terrorist watch.
Yeah, he
did. You know what I'm saying? All because they were standing for their own.
Right.
They were standing against, you know what I'm saying? All because they was against injustice. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, us as a people, bro, if I had the chance to be, I wouldn't even want to be a ruler, you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't even want to be a ruler, but if I had that power to oversee, you know, there would be no division. Every man would have his own, and one person won't have more than the next.
There you go.
Keep it.
That's real talk. Hey, so where can people buy your book? Where can people find you? How can somebody get in contact with you if they want to get in contact with you right now?
If you're local, I have personal. You can get a personal signature copy from me. I have hard copies on me. You can reach me at 270-243-2117. You can reach me through Instagram, which is New Life 88. It's NU_LYFE88. Facebook is Desmond Speakeasy. Twitter is Desmond Speakeasy. And if you like to read digital, you can also get it on Amazon Kindle. And that's how you can reach me.
Say that one more time.
My number is for if you want a paperback copy or a signature copy, signed copy, you can reach me at 270-243-2117. My IG is at New Life 88. It's NU_LYFE88. Facebook is Desmond Speakeasy. Also for Twitter is Desmond Speakeasy. And if you read digital or if you want to order a paperback copy from if you don't want to receive one from me, you want to receive one from off the Amazon distribution, you can go to Amazon Kindle and you can also get it there.
All right, man.
For sure.
I definitely appreciate you stopping by. Wanted to make sure I have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Nah, man, ain't no thing, man. That's what we built this platform to make sure that we use it as a sounding board to connect the people in the community who are really doing things to the community. So I wanted to make sure I share my audience with you. Like I said, man, and definitely wish you much luck. You already know, man, any questions you got, just hit me up, man. Shoot me a text, and we can chop it up. So, man, we're gonna talk again a little later after this, man. But once again, I appreciate you coming by. I wish you much luck, man, and just keep doing your thing, man.
So I appreciate y'all, man. Shout out to the whole Freedom Train Network and Linked Up, you know. Everybody that I met that day in the bottom of Hoosier Street Project doing, you know, what was right for the community. And it just inspired me to let me know that, you know, it's a love and a hope amongst us. And once you seek, you will find it, man. If you out there trying to transform your life, just take the first step, man. And the law of attraction will bring everything else back to you. So everybody stay up. It's all love on this way. You know, Robert McNeil signing off with Freedom Train Network.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. So I definitely holler at you later, bro.
All right.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Ain't no problem. All right. That was the young man, Robert McNeil, out here doing his thing for the 19 and the 20. So everybody don't have the same story. But one thing that we do know about winners is you got to keep going. You have to be persistent. You have to be consistent. And you have to trust in yourself and know that you're going to do it. And that's what the brother did. So that's why we are what we are with this. So, man, y'all got to give it up for the brother Robert McNeil for out here doing his thing. So, man, I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Freedom Train podcast series. You know, check us out on our website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. And I'm up out of here, man. Catch y'all next time. Holla at your homeboy.